Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we wrap up the Challenge Japan Skins and have a chat with PGA Tour winner Lonto Griffin.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Steve Hennessy, Sam Wyman. Guys, a lot of people stayed up late last night or at various parts. I know you were up at various parts of the night, Sam, because you're an old man. Me too. Yeah, same with me.
Old man, like you can just kind of straddle the line between being impressive, like kind of right. Just going deep, or like you just get up
you just
middle
get
of the
up.
Night because
right.
You're old. And then I was somewhere in between.
Of course, we're talking about the Challenge Japan Skins, which presented by MGM Resorts, the new event put on by our colleagues at Golf TV. Bringing back the skins game, which I think was nice to see after more than a decade of that event falling by the wayside. And now you come back with quite a foursome: Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Hideki Matsuyama. Steve, I know, it doesn't sound like the guys all got off to a bit of a slow start in Japan, but in the end seemed like it kind of delivered as a new event.
Yeah, we still got some pretty cool highlights. Jason Day hitting that bunker shot with a 6-iron when they had to play the hole with one club. That was pretty cool. That's something that, average guys have, no shot of doing.
Right.
If we use the 6-iron out of a bunker, forget about it. And at the end of the day, it went to the 18th hole. There was some drama, for the eventual winner. So in a made-for-TV event, that's kind of what you hope for, that there's some
right.
underlying drama. They didn't have to manufacture it. And I like the fact it was under the lights, too. That kind of adds a cool and unique element, too. So,
yeah, we're going to talk to Daniel Rappaport. We asked him about the vibe here versus the match between Tiger and Phil, and he makes a really good point, which is, one, the smaller purse is still, a ton of money for us, for laymen. I think allowed guys to be a little more relaxed versus playing for $9 million. And the other big part of it was, I think, the four-man dynamic, and then at some points it was even more than four, just took a lot of pressure off individual guys. Like the Tiger-Phil thing in hindsight, it was painful because there was a lot sort of riding on there being enough byplay between them and there being sort of this fun dynamic. But they were also competing and playing for a lot of money, so it was sort of a weird dichotomy, whereas this felt more natural.
That's a great point. I know Dan brings that up, and I admittedly had not thought about that. Admittedly, I thought the purse was a little low when you consider versus other events, but you're right. I mean, it did make for a more casual atmosphere. Obviously, these guys are all making money other ways, but it did allow for more banter and everything else. And the thing about the match last year to me is that it was built up as it was going to be this revolutionary event, and the focus almost wasn't on the golf, but on, quote, entertainment. And I mean, come on, it was a match between, two great players that's what it was. This didn't bill itself as anything else. I mean, it was a skins game, with some added wrinkles, which I thought were all pretty good. The double green challenge didn't work out as well. That was in Japan. Apparently, a lot of these courses have two greens,
two different types of grass,
two different seasons, and you could pick which green you went to. I think that one was lost in translation, so to speak. But the one with the rugby players was interesting, obviously, because it produced with one guy jumping on Hideki Matsuyama, and he made a putt, and then this other guy, Brian O'Driscoll, draining a long birdie putt as well, and he was partnered with Rory. They were playing alternate shots, so that was cool. And then Steve mentioned the one club challenge, which we had heard about. Jason Day picked 6-iron, Tiger 4-iron, I think Matsuyama 6-iron, Rory 5-iron, and just to see them, they almost all parred the hole. That's what's so amazing about these guys. But so anyway, the skins game is fun. It produces drama. You have these holes that build up, and then you had some wrinkles as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that we also should talk about is that Tiger was making his return to competition for the first time since having knee surgery and since the end of his PGA Tour season. And I think by all accounts it was, inconsistent, but he was pain-free and hit some good golf shots, so that was encouraging. We'll talk about this with Daniel Rappaport later about how – you know, he's got this terrible record in these made-for-TV events. And one reason is, again, I make the point, is that it's just not the format that, that lends itself to the way he plays, which is he's the ultimate sort of competitor and grinder. And this is all about kind of, you know, shot by shot, you know, hitting, you know, the spectacular – hitting the spectacular shot, and you know, he's certainly capable of that, but he's more of a guy that's going to kind of outlast and outthink guys.
Talking about lending, he did lend his vest to Jason Day. That ended up helping Jason win because it got a little chilly, got under the lights. It was not a one piece of clothing challenge or anything like that. He ended up just lending it to Jason doing it. But anyway, we talked to Dan Rappaport, our newest Golf Digest member, who was in Japan. We talked to him about that, everything else. He was there covering the event for us. So have a listen to our chat with Daniel Rappaport. Okay, we're excited to welcome Golf Digest's newest member, Daniel Rappaport, who was covering the challenge Japan Skins all the way from Japan. You're 13 hours ahead. So, you know, most people over here are just waking up, finding out what happened in the new event, Golf TV's new event. Obviously, Jason Day is the big winner. Tell us, what was the atmosphere like there to start? I know there were some limited tickets there. What were the crowds like?
They're some of the most respectful crowds I've ever seen. You'd think that, you know, with Hideki being the native son, you'd think there'd be some favoritism, but there was nothing. They were just cheering for good shots and wanted to see everyone do well. I think that this is a country that is so grateful. You know, it's a golf-crazy country, but for one reason or another, the PGA Tour hasn't had an event here until this week, and I think they're just so grateful and appreciative to have the world's best players come to their country that I think it's all positive for them. They were in awe. It seemed like they were in awe because they haven't had these players really come to their country before for a long time. So they were extremely respectful, no negativity at all, and just really supporting each guy as though they were, just as much as they were supporting Hideki.
Dan, the obviously the, you know, question one would be who played best, who won the most money, overall quality of golf. Question two would be just Tiger Woods' mobility, how he looked, how his swing looked, coming off a knee surgery. Just from your perspective, give us your take on his overall performance and his health.
Yeah, well, the performance started off, he'd be the first to tell you, wasn't very good. He would have been, you know, multiple shots over par after the first three holes and hit a really, really terrible shot on the third hole, particularly. I don't know how much of that was rushed. You know, he hasn't played in two months, but he figured it out. He was good on the back nine, and I actually thought he hit the driver well. Hit some, you know, it's that fade that he likes, but he was also able to turn it over, hit some right-to-left shots, and yeah, he looked pain-free. That's the most important thing, I think. We didn't really know how he was going to look after that surgery, but all signs are positive. He wasn't, even though it was chilly, which sometimes, you know, is not so good for his back, he seemed to be pretty loose and limber and definitely in good spirits. So I think if people were nervous about Tiger's health, given the recent surgery, that those fears were sort of lessened after his performance earlier today.
Speaking of it being chilly, a lot's being made of Jason Day wearing what it looked to be Tiger's vest, at least to finish. What happened there? Was there, and Tiger had his own sweater on, so it's not like he was going cold either. But did you happen to see when that happened?
Yeah, no, I didn't see when that happened. I noticed on the tee, on the back nine at some point, that was definitely a TW logo on Jason Day's vest. I don't know. The forecast was like it was supposed to be warmer today, a lot warmer than it was. There were a lot of people who were there who were in T-shirts and didn't pack a jacket because it just was, it's supposed to be like 72 degrees, and it was definitely not 72 degrees. So I'm wondering if maybe, you know, Tiger definitely comes prepared with a full arsenal of clothes. I'm wondering if maybe J-Day didn't pack accordingly and maybe asked his buddy for a vest.
You know, we had the perspective of, you know, watching on TV and however thousand miles away. You're there in the crowd, so it's hard probably for you to comment on kind of the vibe versus, say, the match between Tiger and Phil. But I am curious, like, how much byplay, interplay you witnessed between players and fans. Like, what was the overall kind of, ambiance like between competitors?
Yeah, totally. It was really different. I was at the match last year, and just when you're playing for that much money, You know, I think they were really expecting Tiger and Phil to be, you know, super bantering, super friendly, but $9 million is $9 million. I don't care who you are. So I think, you know, both those guys are so competitive, and given their history, you know, once the first tee shot was struck, it was really about winning. And look, this one was much more intimate. It was much more casual. It was much more relaxed. It felt, you know, almost like a celebration of golf coming back, you know, the PGA Tour coming to Japan. It seemed a lot more jovial, a lot more friendly. These guys are all obviously super comfortable with each other, especially Tiger, Day, and Rory really seem to have some good interplay with each other. You know, they're all Nike guys, they're all TaylorMade guys, so they've definitely spent a lot of time together. It just felt very relaxed, you know. It felt very, there was needling, but it, you know, it didn't feel forced.
Right.
Kind of felt forced, I feel like, at the match. Mm-hmm. It was just much more low key. It was a loose affair. It was nothing was too serious. No one, you know, and the purse was a little more modest too. I think that definitely had a part in it too. It was just kind of like a fun, good day. I don't think anyone took it too seriously. Right. It was really chill.
I know when I play for $350,000, I'm much more relaxed. You know, when it's like that low stakes, I just kind of can, you know, just not worry about the result as much.
You mentioned
kind of amazing. Like Tiger left a $100,000 putt short. It was like,
no big deal. Some of the looseness, I would assume, comes from there were three. You know, this was a skins game, obviously, but it wasn't the just normal skins game. I mean, it was for most part, but there were these three challenges that were thrown in, and obviously, you know, two of them really ended up being really fun to watch. The one with the involving the rugby players, although I don't know, Hideki Matsuyama may or may not have gotten hurt by the guy jumping on him. But
that
then,
guy's biceps were so massive.
Huge.
I could not believe it.
Yeah. And then, of course, the one club challenge, which Jason Day really hit the shot of the day, a 6-iron from a greenside bunker, because that was the club he had chose to play the entire hole with. Talk about that shot and that hole, you know, how much the guys were into it playing the one club challenge.
Yeah, so a couple of them were debating, especially Rory was debating whether he was going to try and go 5-wood, 5-wood, and get there in two. And then the guys were like, "Look, it was kind of into the wind, and it was getting chilly at that point, so I don't think the ball was carrying." And they were like, "Yeah, that's really confident. That's kind of telling him, like, I don't think he can get it there." So, no, that was cool. Because I feel like that's one of the things that people always talk about. They're like, "Oh, I wonder, you know, what if you had to choose one club?
Sure,
you know, what club would you choose?" And then they actually did it, and that was, I agree, that was the most impressive shot of the day. He got so low and kind of turned the 6-iron into a pitching wedge, was like laying it flat against the sand, and then made, like, choked up a little bit and made a really aggressive pass at it, and that shot really impressed Rory. I looked at Rory after, you know, because I don't think he could really see what was happening, mm-hmm. but once you know, you can hear the thump of a perfect bunker shot, you know, it has like a sound, and once that it made that sound, you could see Rory's jaw literally dropped. You couldn't believe how well it came out. Was, you know, that's one of those shots that just reminds you how much better these guys are than we are, because they all of them made par. Hideki hits like a 2-footer for par. These guys are probably like 3 or 4 handicaps with one club.
That's crazy. That's ridiculous. You know, we joke about the rugby player jumping in Matsuyama's arms. I literally thought it at the time when it happened. He made the putt, and the guy was so excited. And then,
well, he was,
yeah, he winced a little
right?
bit. Did you get any follow up on that, Dan?
What's that
about Matsuyama's embrace with the rugby star?
Did he actually get hurt?
They asked him afterwards in the press conference, and he said he was fine. So I don't know if it was just like a shock of that much weight coming on you, but no, I think he was good. There was no signs of any sort of lasting injury. He was swinging freely toward the end.
All right, well, that's good, because obviously, like you mentioned, he's got a tournament this week in Japan, the inaugural Zozo Championship. You talk about the guys, Tiger coming back to Japan for the first time in 13 years. You were there the day before. It was a pretty big spectacle, it seemed, wherever he went. What was that day like, kind of following him around?
It was a fun day. He started off at the Nike store in Harajuku, which is like a cool shopping area in Tokyo, and answered some questions there, and the people, you know, couldn't believe it when they saw him. He came from behind the screen, and it was like shrieking. And then he went to a kids center and played some chaotic mess game that was relay race meets soccer meets golf, and I couldn't really figure out the rules, but everyone had fun. That was the most important thing. And then finished it by giving a clinic at Meiji University to the women's golf team. So, yeah, it was just clear that they're so appreciative to have this guy here. You know, one, to have him in their country, and two, you know, they probably didn't think they would ever see Tiger again, given, you know, most of us didn't think we would see this, you know, these kind of tours ever again. So, you know, the theme this week and the number one takeaway that I've seen so far is everyone on the ground here in Japan is just, like, so appreciative and so thankful of what's happening this week.
Important question, press room food so far. I'd love to know what they're offering there.
Today was kind of sparse, I got to be honest with you. It was basically hot dogs.
Hot dogs?
Wow.
Yeah, it was, and when I say basically hot dogs, I mean, like, quite literally hot dogs.
Yeah. No bun?
But, like, longer ones. It was kind of I didn't really know. I honestly didn't eat them, to be quite honest with you. I'm hoping for a fuller spread tomorrow.
Right. Was there food on the course for the spectators?
No, I don't think there was food. I mean, there's definitely going to be food, like, for the Zozo, so there's going to be booths set up. But I don't think they were open today. It was a small, like, they said it was 2,500 people, which sounds really small, but they were all in one hole, so it actually felt kind of crowded.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird crowd dynamic.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I had done this thing leading in, ranking Tiger's 23 made-for-TV appearances. He actually has a losing record in these events. In Skins game, which I can't believe he even played in six prior Skins game, but he was 0-6. Now he loses again. Why is he so bad at Skins games?
Skins games are just weird, man. Like, who knows what the scores would have been today?
Right.
You know, if they actually put it out, because, first of all, guys are, you know, taking lines that they don't normally take, hitting clubs they wouldn't normally hit, and then being, like, super aggressive with putts. And Skins, if you have a 40-footer and guys are inside you, you're going to hammer your putt to make sure to give it a chance to go in.
Right.
So that led to some, like, three putts. It's just kind of a funky event that's all about timing, and I think there's a lot more luck involved than everything else. But, you know, I wouldn't say that Tiger gets nervous or anything like that in these big events. I think it's just one of those things where usually there's four guys and only one of them is going to win, and he just he's run into some bad luck or bad timing.
I think it's likely. Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, tournament golf has a certain pace and a certain rhythm to it, and obviously Tiger has mastered it. You know,
built,
it's like
for tournament
you find a way to kind of pace yourself over 72 holes, or at least the first 36, and so I just feel like that's not what his. I mean, obviously, if that was kind of how he made his living every week out of the, you know, out of the season, he would learn how to adjust to it. But that's not how he's sort of built his game. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. He makes a ton of pars.
Right.
You know, one other thing that did come up. Rory was asked about the Brooks comments. What did you think of Rory's response to Brooks's comments out there?
I thought it was the perfect response. He's not going to escalate it,
right?
That's not the kind of guy that he is. But he's also, you know, he's not going to completely ignore it. So he said, yeah, you know, he's right. Nothing that he said was incorrect. But I don't know if he needed to remind me. And he says it with a smile. He's just like a master of delivery. And he's the kind of guy. He's really blossomed into the kind of guy that it's impossible not to like. So I think that answer just made everyone like him a little bit more, if that was even possible. But I do think it, you know, I think he, no matter what he says publicly, I think he definitely, like, notices. I don't think he loved what he said, what Brooks said. Hopefully it fuels the fire, because I think all of us really would like this rivalry. You know, they're both, Brooks is 29, Rory's 30. They both have four majors. They're number one and number two in the world right now. One's American, one is European. There's just a lot of, you know, everything is set for this to be a rivalry. So let's hope that, you know, Rory's diplomatic answer was just kind of a, you know, front and a smile, and that it really lit a fire underneath him, because I would love to see these two go head to head down the stretch of a major. I think golf could really, really use that.
Sure, without a doubt. Well, anyway, Dan, thanks so much for joining us. Sound, you know, an exciting event, obviously, hopefully the first of many. Jason Day is your champ, and thanks for joining us, Dan. Hope you find some decent food other than hot dogs over there. Thanks again to Dan for hopping on there.
How about Dan just right off the bat complaining about the food?
The food? Oh, yeah. You threw him that. I thought he was going to say, yeah,
just,
you know,
already
it's good.
Complaining. I mean, is this the way it's going to be with him?
Only hot dogs, though? It's a little rough. Although, I mean, I do love a good hot dog. I mean,
come on.
Every week at Costco, golf. That's my go-to.
Right. Wait till he sees the Condé Nast cafeteria food, and then he might really complain.
That's right. He is not been here yet for a real day.
That was his first assignment.
First assignment goes straight to Japan. That's
pretty
cool.
I'm kidding.
Quite a way to jump in there. All right, let's talk a little PGA Tour in general. Obviously, there was another event going on in Asia, the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges, and another big name, Justin Thomas, kept his role going with a win. He seems to dominate in Asia in general. Two-shot victory for Justin Thomas, his 11th career PGA Tour win. He's now reached 11 wins faster than Jordan Spieth reached at this point in terms of starts. You know, he's a former number one. He had the wrist injury last year. Steve, I mean, is this a guy who, you know, we talk about Brooks being the clear number one, but is this a guy who has the potential to be the number one again?
Oh, for sure. You know, we saw him dominate at Medina just a couple months ago in the FedEx Cup, and did the same over here at the CJ Cup, you know, second time in 3 years of the event that he's won it. He talked about how he was hurt, you know, in the middle of the season there, and it kind of affected him and how he played leading into it, and then coming out of it, he was putting a lot of pressure on himself because he knew he was hurt. He, you know, tried to play the PGA Championship, ended up not playing, and that kind of threw his season off. So I think we're seeing him kind of reset. You know, played great, like I said, at Medina, and dominated here on the weekend. Had, you know, a 63 on Friday, and you know, kind of went away with it. So impressive stuff, and yeah, his game is so impressive. Right up there with Koepka when they're both on. So, you know, the dream is that both of those guys are playing well at a major coming up in 2020, and they're kind of duking it out. You know, Rory too. All those guys are, you know, you put their A game against each other's, and the differences are pretty small.
How about this stat from Justin Ray? Justin Thomas, fifth player since World War II with 11 PGA Tour wins, including a major before age 27, and that is Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas. That's it. And then also, most wins before age 27 last 30 years. He's tied for second with Phil, Rory, and Jordan Spieth at 11, Tiger Woods at 34 by the time he was 27.
Right. but still,
elite company, obviously, for Justin Thomas. Yeah.
And he, you know, he has all these PGA Tour events. Koepka has the three majors.
Right. Yeah, he's more PGA Tour wins than Koepka.
Right. Which, you know, Koepka says he doesn't care about the regular tour events. Well, you know,
well, not anymore. Now he does care.
Now he cares.
Yeah.
It's like there's two sort of empowering moments for a golfer, like a top level golfer. One is sort of asserting your dominance, which he did 2017, obviously won his first major and proved that he was an elite player. But there's something to be said for a guy who has what you might call a little bit of a lull and then recovering from that. I wouldn't say last year was a bad season, especially the way he ended it, but to have some level of adversity and then recover from that, that can point to, you know, a really big season. And, like, you know, Rory's had that kind of experience before. Tiger certainly has had it multiple times. When they have these lulls and they come back in a big way.
Yeah, it's kind of what Spieth needs to do.
Totally.
Now he's in that lull.
That's right.
And we saw signs of that this weekend. He finished in the top 10, you know, first time in a while.
Yep.
And game looked sharp. So
same, though. I mean, he didn't do much on the weekend. Now, he didn't back way up like we've seen, which has been that troubling stat. Obviously, all last season we talked about him being basically worst on the PGA Tour in final round scoring average. He didn't do that, you know, but he kind of just stalled over the weekend. Did finish top 10, good sign. But not certainly, like you said, he needs to pull himself out of it. A guy who, unfortunately, Brooks Koepka, we're talking about him as being the clear number one guy, but he had this knee procedure in the offseason. Now he withdraws from the first event. You know, I'm not worried about it yet. He's still only 29 years old and all that. But he did make news in a different way. His quotes, he was asked about his rivalry, and I put that in quotes, with Rory McIlroy. And Brooks really shot that down. And not only did he shoot it down, he shot it down about five times. But here's his quote. "I've been out here for, 5 years? Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the PGA Tour. So I just don't view it as a rivalry."
Yeah.
Basically said the same thing a few other times when he kept getting peppered. Just, you know, threw it out there, very blunt. And nothing that he said is false. So,
no.
I mean, as a, I don't know, guru, mental guru. But no, I mean, when you're a competitor, is this the kind of mindset you should have?
It's so counter to the golf culture, which is guys are so overly deferential, and everyone's a great player, and everyone's, you know, and it's refreshing, you know, to hear a guy who really speaks his mind. He kind of has that kind of a prize fighter, which is a bit of a cliche, but prize fighter mentality, where he's not willing to concede anything to his competition. And you know, one could argue that yes, Rory hasn't won a major since Brooks has been here out on tour, but Rory's certainly been a world class, you know, dominant player at times. So to dismiss it so outright feels a little short sighted. But again, you know, you have to applaud the fact that the guy's you know, he just goes his own way. He's not afraid to say things that are marginally unpopular. You know, we talk a little bit to Rappaport as well about Rory's reaction, which is typical Rory. Mm-hmm. So you know, gracious and with perspective, and you know, self-deprecating, and you know. But it's just interesting because, you know, what you would love to do from a purely content standpoint is you'd love Rory to shoot back at Brooks and you know, fuel the flames a little bit more, but that's just not who Rory is.
I think deep down that's probably what he's thinking a little bit too. And if he had a conversation with Koepka in person, I would have a feeling he'd be like, all right, buddy, you know, you want me to bring my game to another level? Well, you know, let's go in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was a fun jab, though.
You're sure.
Right. I mean,
and the other thing is that, like, you know, Tiger's done it a couple times. You know, the whole Stephen Ames thing and talking about guys. Usually does it after the fact, less so beforehand. And you know, the thing is, and I think this is really true about golf, is golf is so humbling, right? Golf players rarely think about themselves playing against other players. They mostly think about, you know, playing their game and playing the best they can. So it's like it's sort of misguided to channel any energy or any animosity towards competitors, although certainly Tiger knew that he had this intimidation factor, and Brooks is sort of challenging that notion because he's basically saying, yeah, it is me against the golf course, but it's also, you know, my way of asserting my dominance over all these other guys.
Golf is just so tough, though, because, you know, everyone was looking for a rival for Tiger, and I guess it was Mickelson, but you just, it's very tough for both guys to be playing well at the same time.
Totally.
And then it has to be at a major or people forget about it pretty much. I mean, we still talk about the one time at Doral where Tiger and Phil dueled at the stretch.
Right.
That was like the one time. And then the time at the BMW where Phil beat him. I mean, it doesn't really happen at majors. There's so much luck involved. Guys have to, you know, you want the great players to play well every time at the majors. It just doesn't happen. And so, you know, I know Watson and Nicklaus had a bunch of great battles, obviously the duel in the sun being the most notable, but it's tough for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So we want too much. That being said, we did have them go head to head in Memphis and in the Tour Championship within a month span. So that was pretty awesome, and we did get to see it, and Brooks won one and Rory won the other. So, you know, again, I just hope we don't overbuild the rivalry, but they are basically the same age. They both have four majors. They're both two of the best players in the world. It's exciting to think about. So, one guy who would love to be even talked about in the vicinity of that conversation someday is Lanto Griffin, who is coming off his first victory at the Houston Open. We got a chance to chat with Lanto about how he handled his nerves, kind of his interesting upbringing and diet and his excitement about finally getting to play in the Masters next year. So please have a listen to our chat with Lanto Griffin. All right, I'm excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast for the first time, fresh off his first PGA Tour win, Lanto Griffin. Lanto, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on.
You got it. So, I mean, I know you said it was surreal when you won at the Houston Open. It's been a couple days. Has it sunk in at all, or are you still kind of pinching yourself?
It's starting to. I mean, the problem is I feel like the same person that I was, you know, the week before, but I'm going to be in the Masters and the Century Tournament Champions, and obviously the Players Championship is pretty close to me, living here in Jacksonville Beach and playing at TPC every day. So just looking at the tournaments, I think the most exciting thing for me is one, the three-year exemption, since I won early on the year.
Right.
But more so just 2 years ago when I had, or two seasons ago when I had my rookie year on tour, I got into a couple tournaments I really wanted to, like Wells Fargo, and I qualified for the U.S. Open, but having to sit out those invitationals and, you know, Augusta, obviously, and the players, and watching, you know, everybody else, you know, play them. Those are the tournaments that growing up you dream about playing. So I think I'm in the PGA Championship at Harding Park. That's mm-hmm. going to be a blast. Just there's just so many new that's what's been keeping me up the last couple of nights, just thinking about, you know, starting the year out in Hawaii and, you know, and playing the Masters. And it's pretty surreal.
Awesome. Now, you said during the last day you were eerily calm out there. And I wonder what was going through your mind as you stroked that final 6-foot putt on 18? Because you had a tester there, obviously.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, the first time I thought about winning and in the Masters invitation and the Players was 17. After I hold the bunker shot on 17 on Saturday, there's a shuttle ride from 17 to 18. And I'm sitting there, my girlfriend's in the back of the car, and I'm just thinking in my head, I have the lead in a PGA Tour event on the weekend, and I have it. You know, if I somehow pulled out a win, I'd be able to play at the Masters next year. And immediately, I was like, "Why are you thinking about this right now? You still have 19 holes left to play, and you have probably the hardest hole in the PGA Tour, closing hole, the 18 at the play twice." And so that was kind of the last time I thought about it until I got on 18 green on Sunday, but. You know, I wasn't so invested in winning. It wasn't my only goal on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I've always been the type of player that when I'm on Friday, when it's cut day, I want to get as far in front of the cut as possible so mm-hmm. that I can have a hiccup and still make the cut.
Right.
And it sounds weird to say that, but whatever it does is it calms me down to stay aggressive. And it helps me keep making birdies and make the decisions where and if that translates to Sunday, I mean, if I had a one-shot lead on 15, you know, and if I stumbled and had a terrible finish, I still would have locked up my card and that was my main goal for the year. And to lock my card up through 5 events, that took a ton of pressure off me. So the win was more of an added bonus. Now, obviously, I was fully aware of what a win does.
Right.
You know, and it's very, very hard to win on the PGA Tour. You have to get fortunate and be in the right situation. So you don't want to give away an opportunity like that on 18 at 2 putts.
Right.
You know, 2 putts to win if Mark missed that 20-footer he had. But it was weird. I didn't feel a ton of nerves tee to green, which is just really – it surprised me. And what I was doing was I was kind of talking myself – and internally I was, you know, almost talking myself into being nervous. I was like, why do I not feel my hands shaking? Why am I not freaking out right now?
Right.
And it actually – that actually made me a little bit nervous. My mental coach, Greg Carden, we've talked a lot about how thoughts don't hit shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can sit there and keep telling yourself you're going to, you know, hook it in the water or you're going to miss this putt, but that thought, you know, those thoughts they're not real. So if you can realize that and kind of come back into the present, it kind of helps you realize that, you know, that hasn't happened yet, even though you're thinking it. So it was an interesting day. I was pretty proud of the way I handled it. You know, handled my nerves, especially on those last 3 holes.
Sure. Well, obviously, you know, you hadn't won yet and, you know, or really been in the heat down the stretch there, but 5 consecutive top 20s now in the fall, you're obviously playing great golf. So you're kind of getting used to, you know, somewhat being in the mix on Sunday. What's been the main difference for you? I know you're 12th in strokes gained putting right now. Everything else seems to be, you know, pretty solid, but what has it been for you where you've made this leap to start this season?
It's been a culmination of things. One, I found a couple different supplements that have helped me focus more on weekends.
Hmm.
I've really worked on tempo in my transition in my golf swing. I've always been able to do it on the range, and it hasn't translated to the tournament situations in the past. But me and my two coaches, we've really focused on just discipline, practice, and the fundamentals. And I've, for some reason, the last 4 or 5 weeks, I've been able to really slow down my transition under pressure, and it's shown with my ball striking. And the putter's been hot. The putter's been hot since I won in Alabama on the Corn Ferry Tour in April. I really haven't had a bad putting week since then. So that takes a lot of pressure off your entire game.
Sure.
But short game has been an Achilles heel for me my entire career. 5 weeks ago, or 6 weeks ago, the Corn Ferry Tour Championship at Victoria National, I had full blown chipping gifts on, you know, on the back nine on Sunday. And
wow,
I kind of I made a triple on 13 from the middle of fairway from 60 yards out on a par four, and then I doubled 17. And this was on national TV. There's no lower feeling than having a chip and feeling like you're not going to be able to make contact with a camera on you, and obviously the tournament on the line. So after that, I think that was probably a blessing in disguise, because it really made me, you know, buckle down and focus on short game. Why is this happening?
Right.
So me and my two coaches, we worked 3 days before the Greenbrier. We just pretty much only worked on short game. I started taking the club back longer, more tempo-based, and for whatever reason, that kind of cured it, and my short games has been incredible these last 5 weeks, and under pressure, too. It hasn't been, you know, I had a couple up and downs with the Greenbrier coming in, had a couple up and downs, and at the Safeway, just to finish the top 20, but finishing the top 20 early for my category is huge to reshuffle into some bigger tournaments in the spring. So it's been an out of body experience being able to have some tight lies into the grain and actually execute them, you know, with everything that's on the line. So the confidence that I've gained from those 4 weeks, if I hadn't had those four top 20s,
right,
the chances of me winning on Sunday in Houston would have been almost impossible.
Right.
But those four finishes really, you know, if I didn't have to win on Sunday in Houston. If I finished third, it would have locked my card up for next year through five events. And so that calmed me down a lot. So it's a culmination of some hard work, practicing smarter, realizing what works for me versus, you know, looking at guys that are successful and trying to do what they do, whether it be a short game or putting or whatever it may be. I've really just tried to figure out, you know, what makes me tick and what, you know, what works for me under pressure. And hitting balls in the driving range, this is good for all amateurs or at any level. If you're working on something on the driving range that's not going to hold up under pressure or on the golf course, you're working on the wrong things, even if it's, you know, what you need to work on. So I think it took me 15 to 20 years to realize that I don't need to be perfect, and luckily I finally realized that what I do is good enough, and if I get really good at what I do, it's gonna be fine.
Yeah, it's been an incredible run for you. Obviously, you did an interview with Golf Digest, and we called it from broke to the PGA Tour in 5 months. What's it like now? You win a, you know, obviously a million plus check. You're going to buy your mom a car. I think you said. Have you done that? Are you going to treat yourself to anything? What's it like to finally have some breathing room, I guess, after you know, some financial tough times?
Yeah, no, it's a really weird feeling. you know, we went to the Astros game Sunday night, and we were sitting with Jim Crane, who's the owner, who put on the tournament. And I wanted to buy a hat, and we went in there. There were some jerseys in there, and there was a jersey for $130, and I was like, "Man, that's expensive. Not in a million years would I spend that much money on
right.
something." And I was like, "Wait, I can actually afford this now." And so it's cool, but I can promise you, I'm not going to change as a person, or I'm not going to start, you know, spending a ton of money on myself. But I want to help my family out. I want to help, you know, my mom live a comfortable life now, and obviously, you know, support some. I want to start a foundation to help kind of give back to. Basically, I want to be the people that help me get to where I am. I want to be able to be that person going forward. Because if I can help somebody like me make it, and then they pass it along, and you know, it could be a pretty nice trickle down effect of, you know, helping a lot of people.
Yeah, well, you've mentioned your spiritual upbringing. You're very happy for that. I know you've called your parents hippies, and you're named after Lord Lonto. Could you explain to everyone who Lord Lonto is?
Yeah, I didn't really know that until maybe a couple years ago.
Okay.
But my mom gave me a hard time about calling her hippies. I guess she's got a different definition of what a hippie is.
Okay.
In my mind, a hippie is, you know, simply somebody that kind of, you know, eats out of a garden, eats organic,
right.
and lives
sure.
kind of a natural lifestyle, and is. But we had an amazing childhood. Our parents loved us to death, and I can read you a text my mom sent me about what my explain it myself. She said Lantos and Ascended Masters, meaning they moved beyond the needs of the earth plane and achieved spiritual mastery of their bodies, minds and spirits to achieve oneness with the divine.
Wow.
So
okay.
I don't know how to put that into, you know, normal words, but right. I guess that's what it means.
Sure.
But they meditated. We owned a health food store when I was born, and just money wasn't, I guess, being a hippie, I mean, money is not your number one goal. You know, growing up, we didn't have a ton of money, but we had a ton of love, and we had a great childhood. I never in a million years would have known we were poor growing up until I probably wanted to get a new baseball bat or a new glove, and we had to go to get by it used. But, you know, I wouldn't, my dad always coached, you know, my little league teams, and he was at every game. And so I wouldn't trade that for, you know, for parents that were, you know, on business trips all the time and had a nanny looking after me. So,
sure.
Yeah, it was a different upbringing. Definitely one that's not your typical, you know, golfer upbringing, but we had everything we needed. We had the family support, and we had a really good childhood.
Sure, and I understand you were raised vegetarian, but you do eat some chicken, but no red meat. Is that what's a pre-round meal for you, and what did you have a post-round celebration meal?
Post-round celebration, we ate at the clubhouse. We had my girlfriend was there, and my cousin from Portland, her and her husband flew down and completely surprised me. They flew from Portland to Houston for a day. They thought I was going to win. My girlfriend flew down Saturday. She thought I was going to win. I didn't think I was going to win. But so it was cool that, you know, they believed in me more than I did. Mm-hmm. But we just had a nice dinner. We had a buffalo chicken sandwich and some fries. And
oh, okay.
Hopefully my mom doesn't read that. But, you know, I eat a lot of fish, a lot of chicken. And, you know, we grew up eating, this is pretty funny, I grew up taking tofu sandwiches to middle school. And I don't know if you remember middle school, but it's kind of hard to trade a tofu sandwich for anything. So I wasn't the guy that people were wanting to trade, you know, lunch menus for. But when you grow up like that, you don't know any different. That's all you know. So same thing with, you know, religion or, you know, whatever it may be. If that's what you grow up doing, that's normal for you. So if I've never once looked at a hamburger or a steak and been like, man, I really want that because I've never eaten it.
Right.
My friends give me a hard time all the time, and, you know, they obviously, it looks delicious, but if you've never tasted it, you don't know what it's like. So. Right.
Well, you've obviously looked at TPC Sawgrass and seen the players. You've wanted to play in that. You've wanted to play at Augusta at the Masters. What have you ever been to Augusta, and have you started planning on, you know, making a trip there, getting some practice in?
Yeah, that was one of my first questions to my agent was, like, you know how this whole Augusta thing works? Can I go, you know, can I go soon? Can I go get around him? I talked to Nate Lashley, who won the Quicken Loans. Yeah. He's a really good friend of mine, and he texted me Sunday night congratulating me, and first thing I was like, let's go get around him in Augusta, and because he's 34, and everybody knows his story now. He's it's been pretty incredible what he's persevered through, so I think me and Nate will get up there and get around in. And I've had a couple friends reach out that know members there, two or three different friends of mine that know members, so I can get sponsored by one of them, hopefully. And that's just going to be an absolute dream walking on the premise. My college team played Augusta States tournament, I think it was 2009.
Okay.
And or 2008 or 2009. So we ended up playing the tournament on Sunday, and we got to go, you know, Monday morning practice round. Nice. I think we were there for 2 or 3 hours. I don't think I made it to 16 or 15.
Okay.
We just didn't have time, but I saw a little bit. I got the feel.
And right.
Not in a million years if you told me then, and, you know, and that must have been 2008. So in 12 years, you're going to actually be playing here. I wouldn't have believed it, but. So I did step foot on it. I can't remember a whole lot other than just being kind of in awe of just not seeing a piece of grass and how green it was and the elevation, you know, the trees, 18 green, just the whole atmosphere, even on a Monday, was mind-boggling to me. So that's going to be the par three contest. I'm really excited about that. I already got my caddy lined up. Stuart Swanson has been like a dad to me. He's told me for years, when you get in the Masters, that's the only thing I ask is to be on the back of the par three. So
that's great.
We talked Sunday night, and I told him he's locked in for that. So
that's awesome.
So we're looking forward to that one.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, Lanto. Thank you so much for the time. We wish you the best the rest of the season. We'll see you at the Masters. Excited for that. Thanks again for talking today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. Appreciate it. Take care.
Yep. Right. Yeah, you too. See ya.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Lanto Griffin for joining us. All right, guys, we'll end, as always, with some awards. And the best one-day story, that goes to Victor Hovland for breaking a PGA Tour record that I don't think a lot of people knew about, other than probably Bob Estes, because he held the record. Most consecutive rounds on the PGA Tour shooting in the 60s. 19 in a row ends up being the record. The previous record was 18. So he just broke it, and then he had it stopped at the CJ Cup. But this guy's amazing. He's 22 years old. He just turned 22. He hasn't won like Wolf or Colin Morikawa, his two cohorts who just turned pro. But in a way, he has shown even more consistency.
Well,
than
it's interesting. This is airing. This will air. This is Monday, the 22nd. Tomorrow, right. I don't know what it is. On the 22nd, our cover with Matthew Wolf is out. Matthew Wolf.
Little tease.
Yeah.
Little
tease. And there you go. Yeah.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Yeah. PGA Tour winner, certainly NCAA champion. I mean, kind of checked every box. You can make the argument, though, who's had the more impressive start to their professional career. Matthew Wolf obviously had, that win was amazing and had a couple other strong finishes, but Hovland, to do what he's done, to get his card, is on its own is pretty impressive, but we're just waiting to see if he's ready for that next win, or ready for a win, I should say.
Yeah, it seems like it's a matter of time, and he's been really impressive on Sundays, too. He's kind of had a penchant for, backing into some top tens with, Sunday 64s and 65s. He's done that three or four times, so if he could kind of figure it out early in the tournament, it seems like a win is certainly in the cards.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be waiting too long for him winning. You mentioned the Sunday streak. I'm trying to find what he did this Sunday, but he had gone 65-65. Anyway, he alternated 64 and 65s on Sundays, which is pretty amazing.
Across four tournaments.
Right. He's been tearing it up. This time he shot only 69 in the final round. So
that's still in the 60s.
And a T39. Right, T31.
He's number one strokes gained tee to green out of any golfer the last 50 rounds.
Right. Okay, so now he has a one-round streak going of rounds in the 60s. So he'll get it going again. All right. This week in pros are just like us, and this is kind of an unfortunate situation, but she handled it very well. Leanne Walker, former LPGA player, was playing in the senior LPGA championship, and she hasn't played real tournament golf in over a decade. So she's playing in this senior event. She isn't aware of this new rule, which you are not allowed to have your caddy line you up now on putts. So apparently she does this the full entire first round, plays with a different group of people the next day. And on the fifth hole, they told her, I don't think you're allowed to do that. She calls a rules official over. She then goes through her entire first round and up till then with a rules official, determines that she's done it 29 times on 29 different putts. So she has assessed 58 penalty strokes, 42 from the first round, which bumps her score from a 85 to a 127, and then her second round score gets bumped up 15 shots. So she ended up shooting a 90. First of all, I mean, kudos to her for at least coming. I like the rule, right? Do we like the rule?
Well, what I was going to say is, if you recall, when we were having discussions about these new rules coming up in 2019, we had a lot of focus on the drop rule and a couple other rules, and we said this. Don't be surprised if this ends up being one of the biggest rules, especially as it relates to women's golf, because obviously the women's game, it's not a pretty common practice, or was a pretty common practice among certain players to have their caddies line them up, not only on putts, but on full shots. And, I'm trying to think about whether it became an issue for other players during the year. This was obviously
just a few times.
A few times.
But never anything as ridiculous as this.
No. Hao Tung Lee back in January had a situation. It was a putt at the last hole of a tournament, and his caddy, and you can see in the video, is moving out of the way as it doesn't really, And it ended up costing him $100,000. It didn't cost him the tournament, but it cost him
$100,000. Right.
He got assessed. It's a two-stroke penalty. Obviously, there's no limit to this either. That's the thing, too.
Right.
That's why she got penalized so many strokes. But rule 10.2B, and then we saw Denny McCarthy on the PGA Tour. And this was on a like a chip shot, I think. Mm-hmm. His caddy. And again, you could see in the video, clearly trying to get out of the way. So after that, at least the RNA USGA came together and said, it's got to be deliberate.
Sure.
Now, Leanne, in her case, I mean, it was deliberate. She wasn't trying to hide it. But I think overall, we like, I mean, you shouldn't have
well,
a caddy
I think
line
alignment,
you up
alignment
yeah.
is a,
it's a skill.
Big, it's a real skill. You know, like we play with your kids, and a lot of kids struggle with that, and they have to develop that intuition.
Right.
That sense of whether I'm aimed the right way. So I think, taking that option away is a good thing because it's, you know, it's a part of the game.
It's definitely a good rule, but to be penalized
58. Right. Outsiders like, are like, what is going on?
Right. Yeah. Can it be capped, you know, kind of like some of the other rules are, like, you know, up to four strokes or up to
right,
six
exactly.
strokes.
Too many clubs in the bag. It's
exactly.
like a four-stroke max.
Then it's four strokes max. So, and it was brutal because she would have missed making, or she would have made the cut by like one shot.
She would have missed by one. But again, you never really know. I mean, maybe
she
would have
got rattled after.
Right, exactly.
She realized that rule was being broken.
Anyway, good, interesting story.
We could all identify.
We
with
can
that,
all
though, shooting in the hundreds.
Right, we should all
maybe some of us more than others.
Right, if we're gonna play in a tournament, read up on the rules. Yeah. That's basically what you need to know. All right, our stat of the week comes from Nosferatu, our favorite official world golf ranking guru on Twitter. And this is pretty amazing. There was a lot of talk about Phil Mickelson finally falling out of the top 50 this week, potentially. He did not. He hung on. But so the stat is he is now number 50 in the world, Phil Mickelson. Jim Furyk's number 51. And they've actually combined for the most weeks ever in the top 50. They're 1-2. Now, Furyk's tied with Els. But still, it's an amazing total. 2,445 weeks, which is about 47 years between those two guys. Now, obviously, Furyk's isn't current. He got knocked out. But Phil's is. He's been going for almost 26 years. But probably he's going to lose it this week.
I think it's right because he's not playing. So it's
he's not playing. Right. And basically, he needs all chalk to do well this week at the Zozo Championship. But again, just another accomplishment for Phil.
Well, he's going to have two big streaks of longevity come to an end probably this year. One is that, and the other one is playing on national teams for the U.S.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's, it's amazing. I mean, it's, one way to look at it is oh, it's too bad it's ending. And the other way to look at it is, gosh, I can't believe the guy's been doing it as long as he has. So.
Exactly. And we talk about these guys have such long careers, and we talk about they go through lulls and this and that. Like Jordan Spieth right now might not make a President's Cup team. Phil Mickelson's made every President's Cup team, every Ryder Cup team, never had a drought, never had a serious injury.
Yeah.
Or a drought bad enough. Did have a serious injury at the very beginning of his career, a skiing accident.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's right.
But other than that, just, man, he has been
and, you know, we've talked about this at Golf Digest and talked about it a fair amount probably here, is just that his swing has allowed him to be as durable as he has been. I mean, he's a freak athlete, so let's start there. But he also has this really, flowing swing. There's not a lot of violence. There's not a lot of sort of, what do you call that, like torque, where there's sort of your knees are going one way and your back's going another way.
Yeah.
So, which I think he has been pretty outspoken in saying that that's going to cause a lot of guys problems and has caused a lot of guys problems. So, it's definitely something that will be part of his legacy. He's not only was, five-time major champion, but also the fact that he was such a great player for so long. I'm talking about him in the past tense. I mean,
right. I mean, years ago, I remember we thought his career was kind of winding down, and then he's had this latest resurgent with wins the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. He's turning 50 this year, this coming year. He's shredded with his diet and everything else. So he's trying to keep going. Good for him. But if anything, an underrated player, which is amazing to say because of all we talk about, but with all the things he's accomplished, different things.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating to see what he does this year.
Yeah.
And of course, the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. So there'll be a lot of attention on him there.
For sure. All right, guys. We had the first ever Japan Skins, which was the Golf TV event, and that leads right into this week's Zozo Championship, which is an inaugural event on the PGA Tour, the first official PGA Tour event in Japan as well. So a big week for golf in Japan. Steve, first, before we get to some picks, our streak with our
it's incredible.
Our weekly betting column is on fire.
We know Phil Mickelson's streak of all international teams is impressive, but you know, our betting experts have now picked five of the six season events correctly, which is an impressive feat. Justin Thomas gave us our fifth win in just six events. So, you gotta tail our guys.
Man, we're making some serious cash. Now, again, I mean, you know, Justin Thomas was the favorite. He's the favorite again this year. You're not really going down too much of a limb, but still, favorites win sometimes. Right. And
we've hit Kevin Na at 60 to 1. Yep. Someone else is 75 to 1. It was Sebastian Munoz.
Didn't have Lonto Griffin, maybe. Is that the one guy?
Actually, we did.
We did. Yeah. Boom. Unbelievable.
Our guy, Brandon Gadula, is now picked three correctly just in the short
span. So he's
three
out of six just himself.
Yeah. He's up like, you know, in units. This is now going in gambling terms.
But love units.
If you put up $10, he would be up like $1,200
off
just, you know, $10 bets.
That's
this season alone.
That's pretty solid. So. Awesome. All right. Well, Steve, who are you liking this week?
Well,
I know it's early, but
I first want to point out that Tiger's 35 to 1 in this, you know, shorter field.
That's
kind of crazy.
We
you know, saw he looks pretty healthy.
Yep.
At the exhibition yesterday, so 35 to 1 for Tiger. You move up a little bit. I like Hideki at 17 to 1. You know, you figure this might be the time where he, you know, gets his. He hasn't had a PGA Tour win in a long time. You know, this might be the time for him.
Mm-hmm.
Spieth, I was surprised he's at 22 to 1. You know, hasn't done, obviously his streak is even longer than Hideki winning. If you go down a little bit, some more sleepers, Sungjae Im at 35 to 1, you know, another guy we're waiting for him to break through for his win, and Sergio 50 to 1. He won just a month ago on the European Tour, has quietly been resurging a little bit, pun intended.
There we go.
His stats are very nice right now. He's had a couple top tens around that win, so I like Sergio. 50 to 1 is.
I couldn't get a great
juicy
feel for that golf course. It's so weird that we
have. We should mention it's the same course.
I'm trying to think about, you know, I could give you some half-baked response about what kind of player it favors, but it looked like, I mean, all four
kind
of those guys.
Kind of tree line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
not
looked
really
like greens were pretty big. Pretty big.
Bigger
pretty receptive.
Greens,
I think they probably
perched up a little.
Yeah,
bit.
I think they probably put a lot of pins in the middle of greens to encourage to encourage some guys, you know, being aggressive. So it's almost like you don't want to read too much into what you saw there. So
we also saw two holes that were one with par.
Yeah,
skins, which is a little unusual.
The one par three, three of the guys went in the water.
Yeah, so you know, maybe it won't play that easy. Well, before you take him, then Sam. I mean, Jason Day, who just won.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to win.
What are the odds
belt
again? What'd you say was, Steve?
Jason Day is 33 to 1 from what I saw.
Correct.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. 33 to 1 odds for a guy who just played the course.
You know,
and
no
won
player
there
has ever won a Japan Skins and a PGA tournament in the same week.
Going for history.
I know. Right,
that's
so
true.
Yeah.
So, all right. So,
by the way, just total aside here, but a buddy of mine, I texted with you about a golf course that's opening in the spring, and my buddy, this is true, my buddy and I, there's a very small chance that he and I could be in the first foursome playing this golf course when it opens, because he's friends with the developer. That would mean I have a chance to set the course record.
Oh, my goodness, yes! Because he's the guy, he's a bad player.
Is, what?
Your
no,
friend's
he's,
a bad
he
player?
And I are, he's, actually, he's a little better than me, but I can meet him on a given day. Like, he's
I was going to say, if you
how amazing would that be? Now, I don't know who the other two guys would be.
Dude, you run into it, the pro shop, and pin it up on the board.
Right.
Get that up there.
Yeah.
That
get
would
it
be
signed.
Amazing. Yeah. That would be like, you know,
you had the
94
course record. You had the course record for 9 minutes.
Course record hold
36 putts. It was incredible.
Where's the course?
I don't want to talk too much about it. It's upstate New York. Or upstate-ish. Wow. Yeah.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Sammy. Sammy news.
Wow. Interesting stuff. All right. Well, that's something to look forward to. Anyway, thanks, guys. By the way, special shout-out to Steve and I for showing the guts to come in here after the Yankees lost in such heartbreaking fashion.
Speaking of things we don't want to talk about.
That was, that was rough. But anyway, we came in, we soldier on like we do. Sam was here as well. He's a Mets fan. He soldiers on all the time. So it's probably even tougher life for him. Thanks again to Lonto Griffin for joining us. Thanks for Daniel Rapaport for calling in. Thanks to our producer, as always, Greg Gottfried. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week to see who our guest is.